Alaska continues to see its crude oil output decline and continues to look for the basis of an economic future. It continues to have a contentious relationship with the federal government and remains undecided about mining and a gas line. Who would want to lead this state? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. Democrat Ethan Berkowitz says it's time for a change of direction. We'll get him to spell that out. Our phone number, 1-800-478-8255. Local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. Email talk at APRN.org. Statewide political candidates today, tomorrow, and Thursday on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Condor Airlines, offering nonstop service to Frankfurt from Anchorage and Fairbanks between May and September, with connections to most German and European destinations. Details available at condor.com. And by NMS, building a culture of safety through active caring. More information online at nmsusa.com.
So, Ethan Berkowitz, how much money do you think you could spend if you had it?
A lot more than I've got. we're just trying to do this on good ideas and some duct tape. It seems to be a good Alaskan ingenuity.
Well, I remember during the primary, we had you in here for a talk of Alaska. You and Hollis French were duking it out, but you were determined to not spend any more money than you had to because you wanted it for the general.
And I wish I'd had more money to spend then. But look, ultimately, winning a race in Alaska isn't about how much money you spend. It's about the message you have. It's about the vision you have for the state. And we've tried to convey during the course of this campaign that we have a series of ideas that are designed to make sure that Alaskans have more control over our destiny and can do the things that make us more self-reliant. And that has been very sustaining and that's why we have good momentum at this point.
Well, we certainly have a diversity represented in the various people running for a diversity of views represented in the people running for statewide office, I think. And one thing that we're seeing is from your opponent, the incumbent governor, Sean Parnell, a sort of combative attitude towards the federal government.
Well, I think there's a lot of tough talk, and he's all about suing and not about doing. And suing the federal government is always something that we have in the arsenal, but ultimately the state has to do far more for itself than he's been willing to do. And to say that because he's suing the federal government, he's achieving results for Alaska is all about grabbing headlines and not about doing the substantive work that's required to achieve progress.
Well, could you be more specific as governor of Alaska? What would make you different in your posture towards the federal government from the current administration?
Well, it's not about posture, which is what Sean Parnell is. It's all posture for him. It's about working together where you can, standing up to the federal government where you need to, and doing things for ourselves. So when we do get in a situation where we have to confront the federal government, we have a greater ability to determine what the outcome is. You know, you look at any of the resource development projects that exist, I think that I'm supportive of the Coastal Zone Management Program because it gives us another tool to deal with the federal government and make sure that local people have a meaningful say in the outcome of project development in their regions. I'm supportive of the idea that we need to build infrastructure ourselves if the federal government's not there to help us so that we can make a better case that resource development in Alaska can occur in a safe and environmentally responsible way.
I noticed that the Bureau of Land Management, I think maybe it was the Corps of Engineers ultimately that decided that not to permit that well over in MPRA for ConocoPhillips, saying that the impacts of a bridge are not really necessary to get that oil out, that directional drilling could be done. We seem to have a standoff now, and this is one of our big frontier areas. How would you handle that situation? I know how the state, you know, the state objects.
Well,
it says we need that bridge.
The state does need the bridge, and I think I'm reminded of Wally Hickel just firing up the bulldozers and putting the project in place, and we ought to do something at least in that direction where we make a statement to the federal government that this bridge is important for Alaska and for the development of Alaskan resources. It's important for safety considerations up on the North Slope. We've got to be able to traverse the slope in ways that impact attack search and rescue capacity, and it opens up that region for use and not just in terms of resource development, but also for the subsistence hunters that travel that region.
Our guest is Ethan Berkowitz. He's running for governor. He's a Democrat. You probably already know that. Our telephone number, however, is 1-800-478-8255. 478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422. And our email is talk@APRN.org. It can get a little crowded in there, and sometimes the email is convenient. Yeah, I have tons and tons of various issues, and I expect our listeners will have some of the same ones and some different ones, and they'll probably start coming back. But I'm just going to keep peppering you with them. The road north out of Juneau. You know how long this thing has been an issue. You were in the legislature. There's federal highway money at stake.
Well, there's this is one of the challenges with trying to say we're going to do all these mega projects that exist around the state, and all of them have their proponents. And to me, it comes down to a business decision. Is there a financial plan in place that will see any of these projects from the beginning parts of the project, from planning and development, through to completion and then through operation and maintenance? We're hitting a time now where federal dollars are going to be incredibly tight, where the state is going to be called on to do more for itself. And so we're going to have to be a lot more discreet and in choosing the projects that we embark on. Over the last 5 years alone, the state has wasted more than $100 million in doing road studies and surveys for projects that we know had no chance of completion. And that $100 million could have done things that would have made a substantive difference. We could have fixed the bottleneck between Anchorage and Eagle River. We could have improved safety on the Seward Highway, for example. These are a lot of the sort of projects that we could have done. We could have done more in rural Alaska for airstrips to make sure that the strips were longer and capable of handling larger aircraft, and which would have enhanced not only safety but the economies of those communities. So there was a lot that we could have done with the $100 million that was wasted. And more to the Juneau Road project, tell me how you're going to pay for it, and it becomes more of a real project and less something that you're dangling in front of the public simply as an election year ploy.
For some reason, I want to keep asking about Southeast issues. We've had under the Murkowski administration, it would be fair to say that there were sort of lurches in the Marine Highway policy, if it was a policy. We've seen under the Palin and then the Parnell administration increased ridership and more stability in the ferry system, and yet there's never going to be enough money. Where do you stand on the Marine Highway?
I think as someone who stood at the Marine Highway system and waited for those boats, you need to have a highway system, a marine highway system that's affordable and reliable. What I'd like to see happen is us to reevaluate the kind of fleet that we have. I'd like to see more of a mosquito fleet, smaller boats, particularly boats that we can build in Alaska in place so that it's affordable and reliable to travel between different villages and the hub communities. This is a marine highway system, and we've got to make sure that it serves the people of the region. I want to make sure that the costs come down because the circumstances we're in now make it unaffordable for families to travel on a regular basis, and the hours of operation are so erratic that it is a big problem for people to use.
Well, let's take, for instance, the Sitka Run. As I understand, the problem with the Sitka Run versus the Lynn Canal Run had a lot to do with whether or not the ferry employees would get overtime. In other words, the administration was trying to get the boat to just stay in daytime use and not overnight employees, because that was a matter of money.
Well, I haven't studied the particular runs. I will tell you the transportation system, the infrastructure in Alaska is woefully behind where it needs to be. We haven't put adequate investment in it, not just for the marine highway system, but for the road systems around the state. The marine highway system not only serves Southeast Alaska, but it also serves Prince William Sound. Some of the service cutoffs that went between Whittier and Cordova had a huge detrimental effect on businesses that were trying to operate in Cordova and built business plans around scheduled ferry service. service that never materialized, at least the year prior to this. We've got inadequate ferry service along from Homer to Kodiak and serving the Aleutian Peninsula and the Aleutian Islands. So there's a lot more that has to happen with the marine highway system. But more generally, the entire question of infrastructure is a part of the state that has not received adequate attention. And it's more than transportation. It's about communication. It's about broadband. And frankly, Alaska has not kept pace with the rest of the country or the rest of the world. And until we have the sort of infrastructure that allows us to travel to travel and communicate in ways that are on par with the way the rest of the world operates, we're at a huge disadvantage.
As the governor of Alaska, how would you deal with your budgetary process in a time where we're likely to see decreasing revenues? Even you are talking about basically getting more incentives into our oil taxes.
Absolutely. I mean, Sean Parnell has been the author and supportive of the biggest tax increase in state history and the biggest budgets in state history, and that's just not a sustainable plan for Alaska's future. Ultimately, for us to have sustainable budgets, we need to move away from the system we're in now, where we're using annual oil revenues for annual operating and capital budgets in Juneau. That's just not going to work over the long haul. We need to build fiscal discipline into the structure. We need to make sure that there's fiscally responsible leadership, and that as soon as we can, we have to get to a point where we're not spending more than we're bringing in. Right now, state revenues are tied to the price of oil. And so we spend too much when the oil prices are good, and we cut too deeply when oil prices are low. And the overall impact on state spending is that it costs a lot more than it needs to.
So how do you do that?
Well, what you do is you take the idea that's inherent in the permanent fund. The genius of the permanent fund is we're taking a non-renewable resource, oil, and converting it into something renewable. And we do it because we know, as a matter of principle, that this generation shouldn't spend oil wealth that's been cooking in the ground and deprive future generations of that ability. So that is a baseline principle and a value in Alaska. We do that for half of the oil royalty that we get. We don't do that for the other half of the oil royalty, which is the state share of revenue, the state share of oil that's pumped from the ground. We don't do it for the severance or the production tax that we get. That goes into the annual operating budget. And I feel we ought to do a better job of transferring the extra half of royalty, the extra and the severance component and the other mineral wealth that the state gets into a separate fund and move more to a model that's built along the lines of the permanent fund.
So it sounds like sort of like the CREMO plan.
It is sort of like the CREMO plan.
It's going to take us forever to get that explained. So I assume you have this on your website somewhere.
I have explained this on my website, and people can go look at Roger CREMO's plan. I have some important distinctions from the way that he proposed it. And for your listeners who might not remember, Roger CREMO was one of those great Alaskan visionaries who tried to chart a future for the state, had some very profound ideas, which only came to pass in part, and his leadership will be sorely missed.
Well, I just have to stay on this fiscal thing for a little while. First off, I recall Lisa Murkowski kind of coming to my attention as going really against her party to insist on a fiscal plan. I recall Frank Murkowski, when he was governor, having what he called the Conference of Alaskans up in Fairbanks.
I was there.
Yeah. Well, you know, where did it go? It went absolutely nowhere. I mean, you had furrowed brows, you had debate, you had discussion, you had what was sort of a consensus, and nothing changed. Nothing happened. We didn't get anywhere near a fiscal plan out of that.
Well, the circumstances where we are today are vastly different than where we were 10 years ago. 10 years ago, the state didn't have the revenue it needed for the budgets that it had, even skinny budgets that we had at the time. We had a $2.3 billion general fund budget then. We have better than a $5 billion budget now. That's incredible growth in government, and that's happened during Sarah Palin and Sean Parnell's watch. Now we have enough revenue, but we don't have spending discipline. We need more spending discipline. And that's why I feel strongly that if you give elected officials money, they will spend it. And you, the less money you give them, the less money they will spend. They will prioritize what's important and make decisions that reflect more of the state's long-term interest. And we've got to get away from the kind of budgets we've had. It's why I was glad to stand with Lisa Murkowski and Andrew Halcrow when we had a fiscal policy discussion 10 years ago, and why I called for a balanced budget amendment while I served in the legislature. And it's why I've emphasized the need for fiscal discipline and fiscal restraint during this campaign. Because if Alaska's budget, the state budget, is erratic and out of control, it has a huge impact on the overall economy in this state. And the more fiscal restraint and fiscal discipline you see from the state legislature and from the governor, the better it is for the investment climate in Alaska and the better it is for the state's economy.
Well, you look at where the money goes and you see quite a bit of it going to education. Probably, I think it's the biggest piece of it.
Except that even the education budget doesn't all go towards education. If it was all money going into the classroom, it would be one thing. And there are huge discrepancies with where that money goes. Urban Alaska, because the cost of delivering education is significantly lower, sees more of that money go into the classroom. In rural Alaska, because the insurance costs are higher, because the energy costs are higher, because the retirement and benefit costs are higher, less of the money translates into the classroom.
So what are we going to do?
Well, I think what you need to do is pull those components of the education foundation formula out of the formula that don't directly serve students. I want to make sure that all students across this state receive equivalent amounts of state support. Anything less than that puts rural students at a huge disadvantage.
1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. Of calling from Anchorage. It's a local call at 550-8422. Email is talk@APRN.org. Our guest is Ethan Berkowitz. He's running for governor. And indeed, we're going through all the statewide political candidates over the next couple of weeks. We've got Lisa Murkowski tomorrow and Harry Crawford on Thursday. And your opponent, the incumbent, Sean Parnell, on Monday.
I'm glad he's making an appearance here. That has not always been the case.
It's been quite the tap dance to try and do all his scheduling, and I appreciate you coming in to be with us on this so we can get into a little bit of depth on some of these state issues. So education, you don't see any way that it's going to be getting any less. The education item in the budget.
Well, you know, there are efficiencies to be had with the educational system. We need to do more with what we spend. We need to look at our system and say, look, there are some huge indications of failure. A third of the kids who start high school don't finish it. It's almost twice that rate in rural Alaska. So we need to modify how we deliver education. We're one of a handful of states that does not have universally available preschool. Universally available preschool can be had for somewhere in the $5 million, $10 million range in this state. But if you send kids ready to school, ready to learn and ready to achieve, it's less expensive over the long haul. And that will result in long-term savings for the state. And I hate looking at education in cost-benefit terms. To me, education is a value. We need to make sure that our students are equipped with the skills to succeed and compete in the world. But we need to have universally available preschool. We need to get away from this idea of No Child Left Behind, where we're standardizing not just students, but school districts. It's unacceptable to me that the people in Bethel, for example, had to modify the UPIC immersion program because it didn't comply with federal standards. We've got to change that. We need to make sure that we recognize that individual districts know best. Individual parents have good idea what to do with their kids. But we need to do what the poets have always encouraged us to do, which is remember that education is about the lighting of a fire, not the filling of a bucket. And all this standardized testing doesn't treat individual students with the kind of respect that we need in order to cultivate the best of their potential.
Do you think you're the education candidate in this race?
Well, in this race, I'm clearly the education candidate. I've argued for these proposals for a long time. And Sean Parnell, when he was in the state legislature, opposed increased funding and increased support for education. He's resisted it ever since. He's come forward with a component piece, which is a merit scholarship program, which doesn't address the totality of need that our educational system has. Just dealing with the university and the perhaps the vocational and technical end of things, you're treating students at the end of their career. I want to make sure that we get them not just at the end, but at the beginning and in the middle. Alaskan students, you sit down, you talk to Alaskans, they're great people out there. They're achieving some wonderful things against overwhelming odds in a lot of instances. We have a responsibility to make sure that the educational system that we provide equips them to be good citizens, equips them with the ability to think critically and make sure that if they are confronted with situations where they have to solve problems, they have those abilities. And we're not doing that to the degree that we can or should.
Well, I mean, you're a parent. You know, I'm a grandparent now. And I know so many parents that say, look, you know, we'd really love for our kids to stay in Alaska and have a career in Alaska and contribute to Alaska's future. But realistically, they can't get the kind of education they need, the higher education. Whatever it is they're interested in, they can't quite get that to line up with what's available here.
Well, that's more than a K through 12 problem. It's more than a preschool problem. That's making sure we have vocational and technical trainings. And I've long pointed out that we're a resource state. We export our resources. We shouldn't have to import our workforce. More than a third of the people working on the slope don't live in Alaska. We need to change that. Those are good jobs that Alaskans can fill, for example. We need to have a university system that attracts our best and brightest and answers a lot of the challenges that this state faces, everything from cultural anthropology to understanding the effects of climate change and ocean acidification. We should be a premier Arctic research institution. Instead, the quality at the university system is erratic, in large part because we're not offering the level of support and that we need to be competitive.
Ethan Berkowitz, our guest, and from Delta, Shelley joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Ethan.
Thank you. Yes, I've heard that tourism is the third largest industry in Alaska, and I wondered if you had any ideas on how to expand tourism in the state. And I'll take the answer off the air.
Absolutely. You know, tourism is an important component. It's one of the ways we show this state to the rest of the world. It helps create a good image for Alaska, which can be very helpful when it comes time to advancing our interests in the lower 48 and across the globe. What we need to do is market Alaska. We who live here know that this is a great place, but folks in the lower 48 who are trying to figure out where to spend their tourist dollars don't see enough advertisement for Alaska. They'll see advertisement. I've seen advertisement on late night TV for Iowa and North Carolina, and we've got a lot more to offer than those states do, but we've got to communicate that, and that's a critical piece of what we have. We need to have in place the facilities so when visitors come here, they're not always as hardy as we are, and, you know, as Alaskans driving the highway, we're quite comfortable pulling to the side of the road and making use of whatever's there, but we need more roadside facilities so that Alaska is a friendlier place for people to travel. And when we start to do those things, when we do more to support small businesses, we can see growth. I proposed to reduce the corporate income tax for small businesses in ways that would be incredibly helpful so that the small businesses that are around the tourism industry can have more money going to serving their clients and their customers than to paying the state income tax. I think that will lead to job growth and the expansion of opportunities for tourism in Alaska.
Do you think the state went in the right direction on cruise ships?
You know, one of the problems I have with how we dealt with the cruise ship was we stopped making sure that visitors to the state paid their fair share. And the way that came to pass was particularly distasteful to me. Sean Parnell went to a cruise industry convention in Florida, came back, proposed a reduction in the head tax, got that head tax reduction through the legislature, and now is receiving all kinds of campaign contributions from the cruise industry. That looks bad. That looks bad. And that we can't have that. I understand the cruise industry's complaints that they can't be held to impossible technological standards or technology standards when it comes time to doing pollution control. And that's a very fair and legitimate criticism for me. But the reduction in the head tax came to pass in a way that was particularly distasteful.
Well, there was this situation that was going on where one community would institute a head tax And then the cruise operators would say, okay, well, we'll just bypass your town and we'll go to this other one over here. And they were playing this game of playing the communities off against one another.
And they continued to play the game with how the legislation passed. There are winners and losers with the legislation that passed.
Let's go to Dario, joins the program from Galcona. Hello, Dario. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Ethan Berkowitz.
Well, good morning. Beautiful morning up here. You mentioned earlier Murkowski and the Alaska Marine Highway, and Murkowski appointed Robin Taylor, who always seemed to hate the Alaska Marine Highway, and it seemed to me a self-fulfilling prophecy of government can't do anything right by appointing someone that hates the operation to head it. And where do you stand on privatizing government services? I don't know. Well, it seems to me that sometimes you appoint someone, not you, but I guess the Republicans appoint people that don't like the service as a way of proving how government can't do anything well.
Well, I think you just threw a real softball there, Dario. Let's see what Ethan does with it.
In my experience with the privatization of government services, people wound up in jail over that. And that was what happened when there was efforts to privatize our prisons in this state. And Bill Allen, that's how the FBI first got on to Bill Allen. And I'm incredibly leery of what can happen when you offer the state assets up for sale. The interests become less about providing the services that the state is constitutionally required than in generating profits for shareholders. That's not acceptable. But your question about the ferry system reminded me of something that I neglected to mention when Steve asked the question. There's some great concepts out there. Woody Salmon in particular is the champion of the idea that we run a ferry service up the Yukon River and through some of the tributaries there. It's not a new idea. It's the way things used to be. But we've got to think about ways of having transportation infrastructure in the state that perhaps aren't traditional, but make more sense for Alaska.
Dario?
Yeah. Well, thank you for your time.
All right.
Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for your call. Hey, it's interesting getting these interior calls and one about the Marine Highway. Who would have expected it? Let's go to North Pole where Terry joins the program. Terry, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Ethan Berkowitz.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Ethan. I've got a question. I've heard your presentation on us buying shares for the building of the pipeline. I think that's great. I think it's brilliant. I like what you've proposed for fish and game. The Attorney General accountability thing, but what in your plan is designed to guarantee us, the voter, that this will be pursued after you win?
Well, just for the background of those who might not be aware, I've issued a five-part plan called the Alaskan Ownership Stake. The first part offers Alaskans the chance to own a piece of the pipe, either individually or through businesses. The second part, offered what's available in 27 other states, which is a lifetime hunting or fishing license. The third component of the plan is a reduction in the corporate income tax. The fourth piece is an effort to restore accountability by making sure that we have an independent attorney general. And the fifth piece, which is a piece that answers your question, is a way of holding me accountable. And I want to make sure that as governor, I am issuing regular reports to the people. I'm going to we put forward a scorecard so people can gauge my progress on the plans and the proposals I've put forward. And I'm going to be in regular communication. I want as many people as possible to fill out these scorecards. We're going to make the results public. And I'm going to have an open door policy as much as we possibly can. So
it's good. We can actually track how people rate your performance on the web.
Absolutely.
That's the Berkowitz administration. Terry, does that answer your question?
Oh, yes, it does. Thank you very much, Ethan.
Thank you, Terry, for the question.
All right. It's Talk of Alaska. Ethan Berkowitz is running for governor. He's a Democrat. He's run for state office before. He served in the state legislature. He wants to get up on the third floor now as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Are home heating costs more than you can manage? If you're living on a fixed income or reduced income, the Heating Assistance Program may be able to help. To obtain more information or an application form, visit the Heating Assistance Program website at heatinghelp.alaska.gov or call 1-800-470-3058. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
It's Talk of Alaska, and between now and the general election, we have just all kinds of shows, day after day after day of shows, with people running for statewide office on Talk of Alaska to talk to the people of Alaska. Today, it's Ethan Berkowitz. He's running for governor. He's a Democrat. Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and the email is talk@aprn.org. And Ethan, we spent a lot of time in Southeast, but I think we're finally making our way up to the North Slope with Clara, who joins the program from Barrow. Clara, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Ethan Berkowitz.
Good morning. My question is about offshore oil drilling. Are you for it or against it? Because there's a major oil spill. There goes our subsistence. And can you help the natives with our hunting, because we are being targeted with fish and wildlife. We are being limited on our hunting. I'm so nervous. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Clara. Well, you got kind of a smorgasbord there, I think.
I did. And Clara, thank you for the question. And I hope the people in Barrow recognize I shot my first ad up in Barrow this election cycle, and I want to thank the people there for being so hospitable. And I also want to make sure that Clara and all the people across rural Alaska know that I've always been a strong supporter of subsistence. And unlike Sean Parnell, I supported a constitutional amendment to protect rural priority. Having engaged in subsistence activities with friends of mine, and your back friends of mine, it's been one of the great pleasures of my life that I've been able to share that activity and in the customary and traditional ways of life, not just myself, but with my children. As for the offshore question, you know, I spent three seasons working in Antarctica. I worked in ice, and I'm very skeptical of claims that we can clean up in ice. And I think the state has to do a couple of things. We need to pre-position supplies so that if there's a problem with offshore of any kind, we're able to mount search and rescue. That means infrastructure development. It means broadband. It means that we have to have the response supplies close at hand. We oftentimes have problems landing in rural Alaska, bringing ships into rural Alaska. Sometimes it's icebound, and we need to recognize the realities of operation in the Arctic, even if we do get to a time where there's an ice free. I will point out that Sean Parnell's running mate, Mead Treadwell, worked on the Arctic Research Commission for President Obama. And while he was there, he pointed out a number of problems with the lack of spill response. And those problems were part of the reason why the Obama administration closed down offshore drilling. I think that the state has a responsibility to do the things we can do so that if offshore drilling occurs, it occurs in a way that is safe and that represents the rights and interests of local people. It's one of the reasons why, as with many people who understand rural Alaska, I support the idea of a coastal zone management program that gives a meaningful say to local people in projects that affect their region.
Well, you know, we do have some companies that already have leases, like in the Chukchi with Shell, ConocoPhillips. What is it that Norwegian company has bought into it, too?
Statoil. And it's not all offshore. There's new technologies emerging that make some of those old questions different to perceive. There are drill ships that can also be recovery ships. There are things that we can do when it's ice free. And we've got to recognize too that we live in a complex world where we have to balance different interests. The interest in protecting the environment and protecting the traditional ways of life against the national security interests of producing our own oil, and not just in terms of the impact on the national economy where we have huge trade imbalances, but the more energy that we produce in this state is energy that we don't have to import from foreign sources. There's going to be a balancing of interests in the long haul. But when we do development in Alaska, we have to do it right, and we have to do it in ways that benefit the people of the state of Alaska and protect the rights and interests of our people.
You know, in traveling and dealing with people in an international context, I quickly discover that the United States is thought of as kind of isolated on the issue of climate warming, kind of behind the times, one might say. And many seem to think that there will be a point not too far into the future where there will be something more than some sort of cap and trade, that there really will be a way of integrating the carbon footprint into the pricing structure.
It's called, the economists call that monetizing the externality, making sure that you don't have free riders who are not paying the price for the harm that they cause.
One example, for instance, would be, and I've never gotten any Alaska politician to climb onto this, but for instance, coal has an enormous, per BTU output, has a far greater carbon footprint than natural gas. And so does it not make sense to advocate, if you're an Alaskan, to advocate for the replacement of coal with natural gas as a fuel for electrical generation to reduce the carbon footprint?
But there was some of that discussion over the last couple of years in Washington, D.C. And if we have the right kind of response to climate change, which it's predictive, so it's subject to argument. Ocean acidification is measurable. We know that ocean acidification exists because we can actually count where it comes from and see the fingerprint of where the carbon came from. If we address these concerns in ways that the polluters pay, which I think is only fair, we do things to enhance the natural gas markets in this country, which is good for Alaska. At the same time, to be fair, we need to recognize that Alaska has vast coal reserves, and there are things that we can do with coal that maybe not be clean coal, but we've got to pursue the technology that allows us to do coal to gas, which Cook Inlet Region has talked about doing as a way of providing energy here in state. And if people are going to be using coal around the world, Alaska coal is vastly cleaner than coal in other parts of the globe. So we have advantages even with our coal.
You were speaking about tourism, and we have a question from Caroline with regards to that. Basically, to save money, the state changed the way that tourism promotion was done to let the industry pay for the promotion. And the result is that we have what she calls as a linearly integrated companies, which is a nice way of saying that the cruise operators that also are tied in with the people that take the cruise passengers around, they get the whole package. And maybe that's not the best type of tourism to be controlling our image with tourists.
I've always been amazed. I consider myself a capitalist. I like to think that you shouldn't have what the economists would consider to be a vertically integrated monopoly. That's where a company controls the means of production all the way through to sale. That's not competitive, and we need to have competition in our tourism. I want to make sure that, and I welcome people coming up on the cruise ships. They're an important piece of the state's economy. But to be fair, they ought to be free to shop in whichever shops that they choose to shop in. They ought to be free to take whichever kind of shoreside facilities that they want to go on. And everybody should be allowed to market to those visitors.
Well, yeah, but if a person goes on the internet and they start, looking up stuff about Alaska, that's the kind of thing they tend to see is all these various package operations. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, again, it highlights the need for us to have our own tourism marketing.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're relying on the private sector to do it, it's obviously going to be the ones that...
Well, and I don't blame the private sector for doing what it's doing. Private sector is looking after its shareholders.
Sure.
And the state has a responsibility as a sovereign to look after our people. And some of this is going to require pushback against the private sector. And, I'm not cozy with the cruise guys. I welcome their business, and I appreciate the contributions that the cruise industry makes to the state. But unlike Sean Parnell, I'm just not cozy with them. I don't treat them differently than I treat other industries that exist in Alaska, and I'd much rather see that Alaskan businesses benefit from our tourists than outside businesses that basically come here, show off our scenery, and take the profits outside. You know, again, this is another example of Alaska continuing to allow ourselves, because we don't have the right leadership, the strong leadership that we need. Alaska gets treated as a colony because we don't stand up. And we're not tough enough, and we need to be stronger and tougher.
Let's go to Carol, joins the program from Ketchikan. Welcome to Talk of Alaska with Ethan Berkowitz, Carol.
Yeah, I just wanted to get Mr. Berkowitz's general thoughts about outside influences on the elections in Alaska. There's a lot of talk about all the outside money that comes in here, and of course it's legal in Alaska to be registered to vote in Alaska if you don't live here. You know, people have a lot more influence if they vote in Alaska because of the small population than if they live in L.A. or, you know, Phoenix. It's not illegal. As long as you don't register someplace else, you can still vote here and you can contribute money here. How much do you feel like we're really, our elections are being influenced by outside forces? And I'll take it off the air. Bye.
Okay, now it seemed like there's two questions there. First off, she's saying you don't have to be a resident of the state to register to vote?
No, you do have to be a resident. You don't actually have to live here to maintain residency. And I think that's true across the entire country. I wish we had a system where if you couldn't vote, you couldn't contribute. But the Supreme Court thinks that that's wrong. I think we've given far too much power to corporations and institutions in our political process. I think too much of campaigns are spent fundraising and not enough of the campaigns are spent in voter contact, and which has a very corrosive effect on the process. And the corrosive effect on the process is candidates spend the bulk of their time talking to people who they think will give them money, which by and large means people who they believe think like they do. And so you get a lot less cross-pollination. There's a lot less persuasion. And what it does is tend to create more extremism in Alaska's politics and in the country's politics. What we need in Alaska aren't extremists. What we need are, at this point, militant moderates. We need people who are willing to fight for pragmatic solutions, who believe that we have to put Alaska first and the party shouldn't come first. Right now, we're in a situation where people run for office and their big concern is getting reelected. And to get reelected, they have to cater to the people that brought them there. I was really dismayed when Sean Parnell said that he was supporting Joe Miller for the United States Senate simply because Miller had won the Republican primary. You've got to put Alaska first. You don't put party first. And that's a very dangerous place for us to be. We survive as a state. We thrive as a state when we remember that there's only 700,000 of us. And to do this right, we've got to band together where we can and stand up for our rights and our interests. We don't do that as Democrats and Republicans and independents. We do that as Alaskans.
I have a health care question for you, Ethan Berkowitz from Charles in Sitka. You introduced a bill in the legislature to create an Alaska Health Care Commission. It died in committee. If you're elected, what kind of health issues do you plan to address? Also, I think you've introduced an agriculture plank to your platform.
I did.
So maybe you could talk about that, too.
Okay. I did have a healthcare commission. I introduced that concept, and I was very pleased to see that Sarah Palin adopted the concept, and the healthcare commission is up and going. I thought it was a particularly good way for us to have stakeholders involved in policy formulation, and I want to see us pursue that. The other piece of the question had to do with
Agriculture.
With agriculture. The agriculture in Alaska We produce 3 or 4% of the food that we consume here. We're dangerously insecure with food in Alaska. We need to grow more here. And in order to do that, you need low-cost energy. You need to make sure that we have programs in place so we're not selling crop lands for condos. We need to make sure that there's cold storage available. One of the dangers we have in Alaska by being so food insecure is that our emergency food warehouses are in Oregon, which doesn't give me a lot of comfort because I don't imagine that the folks in Oregon will get out of the way if we're hungry. I also want to remind your listeners, many of whom know this, the 1 in 10 Alaskans is in a real way food insecure, not knowing where their next meal is going to come from. If we start growing our own food, we can do more to create jobs in the state, to alleviate the problems of hunger and malnutrition, which exist, and we can be much more independent and self-reliant. I'm thinking of a fellow out in Bethel who grows about 10 acres worth of root vegetables every year, and he hands them out to folks and sells them to people. We need to do more of that. Communities need to take care of themselves more. Rural Alaska, which is facing the demise of bypass mail, which is one of the ways freshies came in, should do what once occurred, which is have local gardens where lettuce and potatoes and local foods are grown. Here in the Anchorage area, we're close to the Matanuska Valley. It's a delta. Deltas are rich farmland. We can do a lot more with agriculture than we have. Community-supported agriculture is a big piece that we're not tapping. So much can happen with agriculture.
You mentioned that you'd go ahead and put your own report card online. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit on your open government thrust, what you would do to make government more open? That's from one of the questions from Caroline here.
Sure. And people can look at me with my record. When I was in the state legislature, I spent 10 years there, 8 as the minority leader. We held open caucuses every day. I believe in transparent government. I don't just say it. I've done it. I put together an ethics white paper for Sarah Palin where we talked about the need for transparency and had some specific proposals as how that should happen. But in terms of making myself visible and accessible, I'm going to be available through all the new media that exists, through Twitter and Facebook, which most folks in public office do today too. But I'm going to make sure that people can see what we're doing. We're going to have regular reports about the progress we're making, the status of proposals, and I want people to gauge our progress. But it's also an opportunity for people to participate more completely in this, in our government, and it makes for a more responsive and responsible government when that happens. It's about accountability.
You also mentioned that part of your plan for the state is to have a more independent attorney general.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you know some states elect attorney generals and some states have appointed attorney generals. It sounds like you're looking for something in between.
Well, I've been around states that have elected attorney generals, and all you're doing then is creating another politician. And I want an attorney general that serves justice and serves the law. What I'd like to see happen is the governor appoint the attorney general, but once that appointment happens, you have an independent attorney general. 46 other states give the governor a legal counsel in his or her own office. So you don't have conflicts of interest between the governor and the attorney general. I want to make sure that Alaska isn't one of the 4 states that has these conflicts time and time again. You need an independent attorney general. What we have just isn't what we need.
So how do you make them independent?
Well, what you do is say that you eliminate the conflict of interest. You remove the ability of the governor to hire or fire at will. For cause, firings are, of course, always within what the governor could do. But I want to make sure that if there's any removal of the attorney general for political reasons, we can't have that.
Is that statutory then?
That could be statutory.
Mm-hmm.
Could be administrative order. Could even be constitutional. It depends how hard you want to pursue this.
Ethan Berkowitz, our guest, 1-800-478-8255. Plenty of calls to fill out the hours. Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, serving Alaskans' financial needs for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by
Fire Island Wind, offering a renewable energy alternative to natural gas for South Central Alaska. Information at fireislandwind.com.
Hello, I'm Peter Kenyon, NPR foreign correspondent and former APRN reporter. Help support APRN's news mission by joining me on October 24th for the first of the new APRN speaker series. Go to APRN.org to reserve your ticket today.
Our guest is Ethan Berkowitz. It's Talk of Alaska. Ethan's running for governor as a Democrat. Ethan, we got a pile of calls for you. This one from the Parks Highway, where Vicki joins the program. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Vicki.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. Mr. Berkowitz, I'm a undeclared voter, and I'm sitting on the fence, and I'd like to hear your opinion on the Pebble Mine issue, and I'll take my take your comments off air.
Okay, thanks very much. There are a lot of great mining prospects in Alaska. I've supported many of them, but I've also fished Bristol Bay, and I have grave concerns that Pebble Mine, the way it's been described, poses a huge risk to our fisheries, and I'm not supportive of the project at this time. We've got a broken permitting system that we need to fix, and until that happens, I just don't have confidence that the fisheries are going to be protected.
So you don't trust the process?
I don't trust the process.
Nicole in Eagle River, welcome to Talk of Alaska with Ethan Berkowitz.
Hello, Mr. Berkowitz. Hello, I'm a pilot here in Alaska, and the EPA has been attempting to ban 100 low-lead, and in the lower 48, that would mean restrictions on flight training and what they call general aviation flying, flying for fun. In this state, it would cripple us. We get things out to smaller bush communities with small aircraft that are powered by 100 low-lead, and I was wondering if you had any say on this, and I could take my comment off the air.
You know, all those EPA administrators who don't actually live or work here in Alaska, I think what you ought to do is bring one of them up, take them out to a village, and say, sorry, I can't take you home because we've got the wrong kind of fuel here. That's the only way for them to get it. Those rules that they make outside that don't make sense for us, just not good enough. And I'm more than willing to go to bat and fight for the ability of us to have Alaskan-appropriate restrictions. But the idea that they're going to formulate a one-size-fits-all deal out of Washington, D.C. has never made sense for me.
Yeah, it is strange. It seems to hit us disproportionately on aviation issues in particular.
Absolutely.
I've seen that over
and the
over
EPA,
and over
too, they just don't get what life in the Arctic is really all about.
Okay, we got Morgan joins the program from Aniak, I believe, right, Morgan?
Yeah. Good morning, Mr. Berker. It's my questions regarding abortion. I know that a lot of people say that a woman has a right to choose to abort your baby, but a lot of them babies that are aborted are females. You know, what about her rights? And also, Scripture tells us that God knew us when we were in the womb before we were born. And also, if someone harms a woman and the baby is killed in the womb, you know, that's almost akin to murder. And it also talks about the sanctity of human life. I'd like to know, what's your views on abortion?
I think abortion is a tragedy, but it should be safe, rare, and legal, and I would never impose my views on anyone who had a different view.
So you support abortion?
I support abortion rights, which is not the same thing.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Morgan, for your question there. You get a chance tomorrow with Lisa Murkowski, too. And I think I know what her answer will be, but I don't know if it'll be as short as yours, Ethan. Rhonda joins the program from Kodiak. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Rhonda. I have a feeling you're going to ask about crab rationalization. Am I right?
Actually, it's much bigger than crab rationalization. Hi, Ethan. Thank you so much for taking my call. In the past, you've spoken very strongly against the privatization of our fishing industry. And given that IFQs, catchers, whatever somebody chooses to call them, have proven extremely detrimental to fishermen and coastal communities that they help support because of the consolidation that occurs every time the fish are given away. What is your position on the existing privatized fisheries we have, halibut, sailfish, pollock, crab, for instance, and the fact that our state... in our country, but our state through the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council is still pushing to privatize more fish, for instance, the Gulf of Alaska cod and you know, lots of other species that's still on the table.
All right. Thanks,
so
Rhonda.
I have to say about that. Thank you.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't think you should privatize a public resource, which is what's happened. I don't think we should have rationalized boats out of the water. I think we need to have a requirement that you have boots on the deck, that people who profit from the fisheries should walk the decks of those boats at least to the maximum extent possible, at least members of their family. So we've got to do more to make sure that the benefits of the fisheries are kept in the state. At the same time, there are huge investments involved with our fisheries and our crab fleets. We need to have a certain stability of rules. We need to start looking past where we are today, have some expectation of where we are tomorrow, and stop making these decisions in crisis mode. Part of the way that can happen is to change the composition of the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council so you have a greater Alaskan voice on the council. The fisheries all occur up here. I don't know why folks from other states have an equal voice to us.
Well, let's stay on this fishing thing for a little bit and also expand it to fish and game. You've already spoken about the salmon fishery. What about the Fish and Game Department and predator control? It seems that what we have right now is a situation where the state constitution is being interpreted to mean that we want to try and enhance those species that people can eat.
We need, as with all decisions, we need to make sure that we're making our policies based on good science. We need to have the investments in good science and make sure that the scientists who are engaged in the research aren't being asked to politicize the results of that research. Sometimes that's going to lead us to results that I might not agree with or you might not agree with, but we've got to make policy calls based on real facts, not trim our facts in order to suit our desired outcome. So I hope that gets to your question.
A little bit, as far as we can this time, because I want to give you a chance to close up here. You got about a minute and a half.
Okay, thanks a lot. You know, it's been a fascinating campaign to be part of. There's a lot that's been going on. There's a couple of points we didn't get a chance to discuss, and I'll take advantage of this last little bit. I'm a supporter of the All Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline. I'm very honored that Bill Walker has agreed to join my administration when I'm elected in order to help us make that All Alaska Natural Gas Pipeline happen. The natural gas pipeline is huge for this state. At the same time, the biggest economic problem we face is declining production off the North Slope. I proposed ways of fixing the broken tax system that's in place. Sean Parnell fought me on it every step of the way until about last week when he had an election week or election month conversion. I don't know what he's going to come up with next, whether he's going to start to bring rigs up to Cook Inlet because he thinks somehow that's going to answer the shortage of natural gas. But what this state needs more than anything else is a leader who's got the ability to see problems before they exist, devise solutions, and the strength and toughness to make things actually happen. We cannot continue to stand still in a changing world. It puts Alaska in real jeopardy. We cannot ignore the problems we have and have a governor like Sean Parnell who just grabs a headline and then moves on. It's just not what Alaska needs. And I'm reminded of the fact that this last summer, we saw two of our great leaders, Wally Hickel and Ted Stevens, pass on. And they were both people who believe that we have to put Alaska first. That's the kind of governor I'll be. Please give me the chance. I'd appreciate your vote.
Ethan Berkowitz, our guest. Sean Parnell comes up on Monday. Lisa Murkowski tomorrow. Thanks to Dave Waldron at the controls. I'm Steve Heimel.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network. The Federal Aviation Administration sets rules for the operation of aircraft in airports and provides services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska, and when passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. There's more information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska or toll-free at 1-866-357-4704. This message sponsored by the FAA. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a pre-existing medical condition, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the new temporary federal insurance program being administered by ACHEA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. The program is for those with qualifying pre-existing conditions and who have been uninsured for at least 6 months. Talk to an independent insurance broker or go online to ACHIA.com. This message sponsored by ACHEA Fed. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.